are with us to hear thoughts from the scriptures, which he will bring to us. We've appreciated his services in the past. Look forward to another blessing, and he has chosen as his subject the three tabernacle fires. The three tabernacle fires.
Yesterday, brethren, in our testimony, we forgot to bring the love and greetings of the Chicago Ecclesia, and we're very happy to do that. We have a very popular newscasting team in Chicago, Bob and Betty Sanders, and one of their devices is frequently they'll have pop quizzes of each other. I got a pop quiz for you. Three tabernacle fires. What are they? That should be basic. You don't know. What are the three tabernacle fires?
In the camp.
One's in the camp. One on the brazen altar. One on the incense altar. Three simultaneous fires on the Day of Atonement. That's not what we're going to talk about. But that's what we think about, isn't it? When we think of three tabernacle fires, and those certainly are three simultaneous fires, and there's a lot of good lessons to consider in those. Pop quiz number two. There's three other fires connected with the tabernacle. I'll give you this much of a clue. These fires are mentioned in three consecutive verses. Verse one after another. Three fires mentioned verse after verse. They're all different. What three fires are we talking about now? All of a sudden, I don't see any takers. Well, 2 weeks ago, you asked me that question. I couldn't answer it either. Our text is Leviticus 9, 24 through 10, 2. Leviticus chapter 9, verse 10, 24 through Leviticus chapter 10, verse 2. Three verses. And there came out a fire from before the Lord, and consumed upon the altar the burnt offering and the fat, which when all the people saw, they shouted and fell on their faces. Fire number one. A fire from the Lord consuming the sacrifice on the brazen altar. 10:1. And Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer, put fire therein, put incense thereon, and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded them not. The strange fire of Nadab and Abihu, fire number two. Verse two, and there went out fire from the Lord and devoured them, and they died from the Lord. The fire that devoured Nadab and Abihu, fire number three. In chapter 9, verse 24, we have the fire of true worship. In chapter 10, verse 1, we have the fire of false worship. In chapter 10, verse 2, we have the fire of judgment. These three fires follow successively, one upon another, in the incident told here. Now, as we get into the study, we're going to find they don't follow in this order, that these three verses are not chronological in order, that the first of the fires we mentioned, that of 9:24, is chronologically the third of the fires to take place. That the first fire chronologically is the fire of Nadab and Abihu. The second is the fire of judgment, and the third, true worship. But we're going to treat them in this order. But just for now, we're going to make a statement that we'll come back later and prove. And that is that the 10th chapter of Leviticus properly belongs between 9:14 and 9:15. It's a large parenthesis that Moses, in compiling this book, saw fit to remove because the subject matter was removed. And for subject purposes, separated it. But chronologically, I think we're going to notice as we get into the study, chronologically this chapter happens within the context of the ninth chapter. Leviticus chapters 8 and 9 form a unit. They occupy 8 specific days in Israel's history, a sacrifice that, as far as the scriptures inform us, was never repeated. May have been, but never, we are not told that it was ever repeated. So as far as we know, it was a one-time sacrifice. Leviticus, the 8th chapter, we generally label the consecration of the priesthood. It was a 7-day sacrifice to install at the beginning of the tabernacle the priesthood. Perhaps it was repeated when a new priest came, high priest came in office, but that's highly speculative. That certainly is not known. Leviticus, the 9th chapter, happens on the 8th day of that same incident. It is the continuation of the installation of the priesthood. But we treat it differently. In fact, in Tabernacle of Shadows, it's treated as another type of the Atonement Day. Not that it happened on the Atonement Day of Israel, but that it represents, from a different perspective, the same things that are represented in the 16th chapter, which covers the Day of Atonement. And for that reason, it's another picture of the Atonement Day, and very properly so styled. There are at least 17 differences between the 9th and the 16th chapter. All 17 of these indicate one point, and that is that the 9th chapter is the Day of Atonement as viewed by the priesthood, where the 16th chapter is the Day of Atonement as viewed by God. The same incident from two different perspectives, two different viewpoints. And all 17 of the differences illustrate that one point. But our subject is not the comparison of Leviticus 8, 9, and 16. We're looking at three fires. We want to see certain lessons from these three different fires. The first of these is the fire that devoured the burnt offering. And I emphasize that. This is not the fire that devoured the sin offerings. Nor is this even the fire that devoured the burnt offering that followed the sin offering of Aaron. This is the fire that devoured the burnt offering that followed the people's offerings, with the animals of the peace offering that were there. This fire was miraculous. This fire was not kindled by man. This fire did not happen because when they put the animal on the brazen altar, there was fire burning. But this was fire that came from God to burn. Which brings up top quiz number 3. In the Bible, there are 6 people. This is one. I'll give you that much of a clue. There's 5 others. 5 other times where God miraculously starts a fire to accept an offering. Who are the people involved? Who can you think of?
Elijah.
That's a very obvious one. Elijah is another one. Who else? 4 more. Who? Did God start the fire? No.
I thought fire came down.
There was fire that went between the animals, a furnace of fire, but the consumption is not mentioned specifically as being by the God. Moses? Hear that? Where?
In the burning bush.
Okay, but there's no offering consumed. The bush stayed. Or consume the offering. Noah doesn't say that. I thought that was one too. As far as we know, Noah started that fire.
Jacob
doesn't say that. Aha, come on, Bible students. Gideon. Okay, there's another one. Gideon. Remember Gideon? The angel came to him. He offered him, said, "Can I bring you something?" And he put it on a rock, and fire came out of the rock and devoured it. That's in Judges, the 6th chapter, verses 20 and 21. So Gideon is one. Elijah, by the way, for those taking notes, is 1 Kings 18:38. 2 down, 3 to go. Who else?
Abraham.
Now, we covered Abraham. Their sacrifice is not mentioned specifically. It may have been. That could be a 7th one. That one is a little ambiguous. But these others are specifically mentioned as coming from God. Well, the first one is a little ambiguous, too. But I think we all recognize it as so. Abel. God had respect unto Abel's sacrifice, testifying by it that his sacrifice was more acceptable than that of Cain. Then the other two are less known. The one of Abel is in Genesis 4:4. David. When David brought the ark to Jerusalem, he did more than bring the ark. He set up an altar on the threshing floor who's that guy?
Ornan.
I couldn't think of his name. Thank you. On the threshing floor of Ornan, he set up the altar. He offered animals, and 1 Chronicles 21:26 says fire came from God and devoured those animals. So we have another case with David. And the last one is Solomon. In the dedication of Solomon's temple, as found in 2 Chronicles 7:3, the offering there was devoured by fire miraculously from God. So we find this incident repeated 6 times in history. First with Abel, second with Aaron here in the incident, Moses and Aaron in the incident in the tabernacle, third with Gideon, fourth with Elijah, fifth with David, and sixth with Solomon. And as far as I could find, those are the only 6 that are definitely provable, although I agree the Abraham one is possible. That one is just a little difficult to prove. Now, there's something unique about these 6 sacrifices. I think if we look them over, we can maybe get the point of what this fire is all about. Cain and Abel is the first recorded sacrifice to God. The first time it's recorded that an animal was slain in offering to God. And there was other fruits of the field that Cain tried. How did they know to offer animals? Perhaps they were told, but we're not told that they were told. More likely, it was an assumption of giving to God a gift from that which God had given to them. But was it right? God showed, yes, it's right. I'll indicate my acceptance by burning it. I will take what you offer me. That's the only way God had to take it. He never takes a literal hand, reaches down, and says, thanks a lot. So it's his way of accepting or saying, yes, I will use that which you are giving. Now, when you come down to Gideon, there was a very legitimate question Gideon had, and that was, how do I really know this whole thing's of God? You know, having proven to him with the fleece incident, he says, I want to thank you. But now will that thanks be accepted after the doubts that were shown? The consumption of that shows the angel accepted him. And by that went into a pact of friendship, because that was a meal he offered. That wasn't a sacrifice. And here it was the covenant meal. With the case of David, he was going outside of the tabernacle arrangements. He was not a priest. It was not set up yet within the tabernacle structure as the tabernacle had been set up. He would just set up the altar there for worship. Now, would this be acceptable? It was a change. And God said, yes, I accept this. I appreciate the fact that you have brought the back to Jerusalem. And the point of change was the acceptance of the point of change was indicated by the fire. In Solomon, again, you have a whole new arrangement. A temple replacing the tabernacle. Would God accept this temple condition? Yes. He accepted the temple condition by offering. Now, some have suggested that in the 3 of these cases, the one we're studying in Leviticus 9, the one of David, and the one of Solomon, that there's an additional point, and that is that that fire, once ignited, never went out. And therefore, that's why they always had to bring coals from that fire. But that seems a little hard of acceptance because of the moving of the tabernacle. And certainly, you didn't keep the fire on the tabernacle, although they may have carried it in censers beside, because they put the cloth over, and you would have had a burning. The one thing in common is God shows his acceptance of a new arrangement of worship by the consumption of the sacrifice offered. And it was done in a miraculous manner, even though subsequent sacrifices of burnt offerings were either kindled or consumed by fires that were burning upon the altar. There was not a miraculous starting of a fire. Now, you know, we like to think that when things happen in the scriptures like this, they happen in sevens. We've given you 6 instances. Well, there is a 7th. The 7th is your sacrifice and mine. And it's mentioned also. But we sometimes don't catch it because of the phraseology. It's in the 20th Psalm. Psalm 20. And we're going to start at the beginning of the psalm. The Lord hear thee in the day of trouble. The name of the God of Jacob defend thee. Send thee help from the sanctuary, Strengthen thee out of Zion. Remember all thy offerings, and accept thy burnt sacrifice, Selah. That's all it says. That in the day of trouble, feel free to go to the Lord. Feel free to offer to him your sacrifice of praise and your burnt offerings. The Lord accept thy burnt offerings. That's what happened in all these cases. The Lord accepted the burnt offerings. But now this word translated accept here does not mean accept. The word translated accept here means the Lord turn to ashes all thy burnt offerings. That's exactly the thought we had in Leviticus, the 9th chapter. The Lord turned to ashes that burnt offering. That's exactly what happened to Abel. The Lord turned to ashes his sacrifice. That's what happened to David. That's what happened to Solomon. That's what happened to Gideon. Their sacrifices were turned to ashes by God. That's how God accepts. By turning to ashes your sacrifice. Another pop quiz. Simple one this time. Every once in a while when I go someplace, especially to some friends that are very close who have given me a gift someplace over the years, if they give me a necktie when I go, my wife always arranges to see I have the shirt that has that necktie. Why? Obviously, to show my appreciation. So the person can see me wearing the tie they gave. Not to show that, oh, I got this tie from you, but to show I like it enough to wear it. We show appreciation, don't we? By trying to use that which is given to us. That's very appropriate. It's also appropriate in the gifts that God gives us. God gave us life. That's quite a gift. The only way we can show appreciation is to use that life. God may have given some of you a talent of music. He has. Paul's sitting here. There's others of you too. The only way you can express your appreciation for that is to use it. He may have given others of you a talent for correspondence. The only way you can show your appreciation is to use it. Others have a talent for smiling. And believe me, that's a talent. It lightens up the room. Use it. That's what Paul is saying in Romans 12. What God has given, use it. Or lose it. The talents that are given can only be appreciation expressed by being used. We have offered gifts to God. The most prominent among them for most in this room has been the gift of yourself. The gift of one life given in consecration. If God is going to accept that gift, he's going to use it. That's what it's saying. That God's acceptance is shown by the using of it. But when we make the offer of that gift, what do we say? Lord, take my life and let it be acceptable to thee. That's the hymn we should have used. Tom, I couldn't think of that one, but that one of 277. Take my life, take my hands, take my talents, take my days, take everything. But now, if God is going to show the acceptance, he's going to turn it to ashes. He's going to send out fire to consume it. So often we say, Lord, I want to give myself totally to thee. And then the Lord puts in front of us an opportunity to use it, and we say, yes, Lord, I want to give myself totally to thee. And we turn our back upon those things that he puts there, the opportunities to use it. We don't let the fire burn it. Fire. Persecution. Heat. Trials. We ask for it when we consecrate it. We ask for it when we pray, Lord, accept my life. But when it comes, do we take it as fire from the Lord? Do we realize that the giving of a trial, the giving of persecution, is God's method of accepting our sacrifice? He sends the fire to consume which we offer. That is the fire of true worship, his acceptance. In Chicago, in our Tuesday night study, We're presently in the third volume. We're in that section that deals with how will we know when the door of the high calling is closed. And you recall, he said, there are three possible ways we will know. Either God will give us a specific date, we can't find one. Or God will so arrange the affairs of men that everybody will accept the truth and we're into the kingdom. We just pass somehow silently over into the time when you don't need to say to your neighbor, know the Lord, they'll all know him. Or the time will come when you can't sacrifice. When the opportunity will be gone because the dark night of persecution will stop it. And he says, we anticipate it'll be the latter. But what he's also saying, though he doesn't use these words, but what that is saying, is that without the opportunity of persecution, without the opportunity of sacrifice, there is no opportunity of the high calling. That the opportunity of the high calling involves the opportunity to give of oneself. Involves the possibility that gift to be accepted by being burnt up. That's as simple as can be said. Turn to ashes. If we can always keep that thought in mind, that, Lord, I want to be turned to ashes. I don't want to say, Lord, give me another 3 days. Give me another 3 months. I want to say, Lord, if I can be consumed today, consume me today. That is asking for his acceptance. He may say, fine, son. I'd rather consume you over a long time. Great. Fine. Appreciate that. But appreciate it only as that long time is being used in consumption. It is the consumption that is the acceptance. It is the burning that is the approval. It is the offering of trials and persecutions and the opportunity of using one's life. All for Jesus, all for Jesus. That is the only way that we will know that God appreciated the gift that we gave him. Just as the only way I can show my appreciation for the necktie is to wear it. The only way we can God shows his appreciation for our life is to use it. You see, he gave it to me. I'm going to use it. I said, well, I didn't really mean it. I was giving it to you. I just was loaning it to you for a few hours today. Don't take me too literally. No. Take me literally, Lord. Take me, use me. That is the sacrifice and the fire of true worship. Let's go back. Second fire. The fire of false worship. Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer, put fire therein, put incense thereon, and offered strange fire before the Lord, which he commanded them not. What is the strange fire? I gave this talk last week, and I said there were two possibilities, and the brother said, no, there are three. And there are three. There are three possibilities. Each one holds lessons, one of which I think is the true one. But they've each got points to it. And you can each take the points from the verse. Some commentators look at the last phrase, which he commanded them not, and say that is the key to what made the fire strange. One of the differences between Leviticus 9 and Leviticus 16 is in Leviticus 9 there is no incense. In Leviticus 16 there is incense offered. In the Day of Atonement, as seen from our perspective, God does not command the type to be shown by an offering of incense. In the Day of Atonement, as seen from God's perspective, he commands that incense be offered, but only with the bullock. There were two animals, but there's only one offering of incense, because that was all that was needed. The object of the incense was to purify the Most Holy so that high priest could go in. Once it was purified, he could go in twice. It was a multiple entry visa, as we would say in our travel experiences coming up. He was given this two permissions to go in through the one offering. Tabernacle Shadows, in his treatment of Leviticus 16, I like very much on his explanation of the incense. The perfections of Christ offered over the fires of trial. That's what gave a sweet savor to God. But Leviticus 9, which looks from our perspective, recognizes that there are no perfections to offer. And if we come in and say, Lord, this is my service, and we give our incense, I didn't command you to give me any perfections. You haven't got any to give. If you're trying to give that as your worship, that's going to be worthy of the fire of judgment. Anytime we exalt our worship and assume to offer what God has not commanded, that is a sin of presumptuousness. It is an assumption that may not be justified. It's the same lesson that you see in Exodus 21 when he told them how to build an altar. And in building an altar, he says, don't put any steps on the altar, because if you do, they can see your nakedness. Now, the sisters can appreciate that better than the brothers, because we now wear some Phineas slacks. Well, so does some of you now. But anyway, we wear slacks, and the sisters are basically wearing skirts, and when you go up, you are exposing to the viewers beneath the nakedness that is under. Well, in those days, the men wore dresses, too. They wore these robes. And so, very literally, the higher they went, the more they exposed what was under the robe. The higher we exalt our worship, how great it is the way I worship God, the more we expose our weakness. The more we say how good I am because of what I've done, the more we show how bad we really are. Because we expose ourselves, that which is under the robe of Christ's righteousness, to view. That's the same lesson, if the point here is that the strange fire was the very fact of trying to offer incense. But others say, no, that isn't the strange fire. The strange fire was the fact that they put the coals in the censer. That they didn't go to the brazen altar where God had kindled the fire and taken the coals from the brazen altar. But they kindled their own fire. They lit their own fire, and that made it strange. And there's some lessons there, too. There's some very good lessons on that point. That trials are acceptable insofar as trials are brought upon us from God. But we begin asking for our own persecutions, kindling our own fires. Those are the trials that are not acceptable to God. Well, Peter covers this when he says, if you suffer as a busybody, or as a murderer, or as a bunch of other things, what thing have you? He said, if you want to kindle your own persecution, sometimes we do that. We go out and we ask for it. And then we say, boy, did I get persecuted today. And don't doubt it. You want to use the boss's time to talk religion all day? Yes, you're going to get fired. You ask for it. That's a fire you kindled. But if we accept the trials that come because of just faithfulness to God, that's a fire he kindles. And that is praiseworthy. But the third explanation, and I think the most logical of the three. I'm going to read the text again, and notice where the word strange appears. It's strange. Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, took either of them his censer and put, does not say put strange fire therein. And does not say kindled fire. It says they put fire therein. They got the fire from someplace. They put the fire therein. They put incense upon it and they offered the strange fire. It became strange after putting the incense upon it. It is not mentioned as being strange before the incense is put. It's after the incense is put that the word strange comes into the context. And the suggestion of some is, yes, they offered incense, and that they shouldn't have done, but that in itself was not the crime. They offered the wrong incense. They didn't offer the incense that God had provided, but they offered incense of their own making. And that, you notice, different chemical reactions to fire. Certain chemicals, a blue flame, certain pink, you know, when you get the wrong color flame, that's strange. That they had offered a strange fire because they had offered a strange incense. And again, that's a good lesson for us. If in giving our offerings to God, we begin compounding our own concept of what's acceptable to God, that's strange. He has compounded all offerings, and the formula is found right here. But when we begin rationalizing our own formulas of incense, when we begin coming up with our own concepts of what is acceptable worship, that's strange. And it's not acceptable. It's going to give off the wrong color, and sometimes it's going to stink instead of being a sweet odor. It is not going to be that which is going to purify or sanctify anything. So whatever the strange fire is, there's a beautiful lesson that can be taken. I tend to refer to the fact that the strange fire was in the type of incense offered. But it may have been one of the others, and fine. If you prefer that, take the lesson from that one. Because there are good lessons in any case. In any case, it is, Lord, I want to do your will. That was the real problem, whatever the strange fire was. It was not a doing of what God's will was. It was a doing of what Nadab and Abihu wanted to have done. The third fire is the fire of judgment. Fire came out from the Lord and consumed them. Whether it was a lightning bolt, whether it was a flame from the altar that shot out their way, or whether it was just anything else, is beside the point. That's immaterial. It was a death-dealing fire that came from God. And it had a whole chain of reactions upon different people. Upon Nadab and Abihu, the reaction was death. In Numbers, the third chapter and the fourth verse, we have a recounting of this incident with just one minor addition that may show how serious this fire is. And Nadab and Abihu died before the Lord when they offered strange fire before the Lord in the wilderness of Sinai. And then he adds a little parenthesis, and they had no children.